I'm going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 1090. And Megan Clout, will you close? Senator George, would you, can you close this?
Yes, I will.
Okay. Chair Shannon, members of the committee, Senate Bill 1090 requires election of members of district boards of certain mass transit. And this particular bill only affects Portland and Eugene Mass Transit. Portland and Eugene? Okay. And the first one to testify is Genoa of the Oregon Association of Realtors and Maria Edwards. And Nikki? Are you Nikki? Okay. I almost called your name too, so go ahead. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chairman, members of the committee. I am Genoa Ingram of the Oregon Association of Realtors, and with me today is Marcia Edwards, Nikki Gustin, and Don Mogensen with the Eugene Association of Realtors. The Eugene Association of Realtors asked our association to bring this bill forward to address a particular situation.
Can you? There, they closed the door. Thank you. Okay.
Our Eugene Association of Realtors asked the association to bring this bill forward to address a particular situation in the Eugene area, and they are here today to make their case for you. I understand that that Metro will be bringing forward some amendments that would exclude them from the bill. I've talked with Mr. Phelps about that, and he will be bringing those forward, and we will be supportive of those amendments because it's a special situation, and as we understand it, number one, there doesn't seem to be the same sort of problem in the Portland area as in the Eugene area, and also because Metro is elected, it's not a concern to us.
Okay.
There are also letters that my members will summarize for you representing opinions of individuals who are not able to be here today but still are supportive of the bill. And I'll step back out of the way so that Mr. Mogensen can come forward. Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Thank you. And we have, I haven't counted, 7 or 8 bills that we want to get to. So if you'd be brief, we'd appreciate it.
Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Mm-hmm.
I'm Marcia Edwards, representing the Eugene Association of Realtors and the Oregon Association of Realtors. We are fortunate that our current transit system board locally provides a balanced perspective of our community needs today. However, philosophically, the Realtors constituents who I represent today find this transit tax very unfair as it goes back to the basic premise of our American principles to which we fought over at the Boston Tea Party. It's taxation without representation. As independent contractors, we pay for the tax on a system that we seldom use as our profession requires a vehicle. However, accepting the responsibility that's been put upon us, we ask one thing, for a system of checks and balances, accountability to those contributing to the fund to an elected board. An example of the possible ramifications of the status quo is a circumstance that came to my attention from a client customer of mine locally in the Eugene area that said that it was a circumstance where there is a process that enables eminent domain acquisition of private property by the board of directors without public input previously. Now they've set up internally their own system for looking at public input, but that's all internal, and our concern is that there's never a moment where the public can actually get access to that unless it's allowed by the board of directors. As realtors, we feel that it's our responsibility and concern when private property rights and private citizens are at risk without their public input in the process. One argument that I've heard is that the utility companies are run by appointed boards, as should be the transit systems. However, it is also my understanding that their budgets are not quite as tax-based as this is currently. Thank you for your audience today.
My name is Nikki Gustin, and I'm the Eugene Association of Realtors president and president of Windermere Jean Tate Real Estate in Eugene. And I also have a letter from Gordon Bolts, who is the broker manager of the Springfield office. And it is basically, I'll just sum it up because Marcia said quite a bit here as to how we all feel, but we feel that since the board has the power to assess businesses, within the district, it seems only right that those directors be responsible to the residences and the businesses within the area they represent via the election process. Obviously, it is our opinion that appointed directors do not have such a direct responsibility. Thank you.
Okay, so what you're saying is they have the ability to tax you, spend the money, but you don't have the ability to elect them.
That's right.
Basically. Okay, any questions?
Yes. Chair, I have a couple questions.
Thank you. Thanks for your testimony here today. First, I've heard of from you guys about why you want the change. I'm wondering how you think things will be different or better if this was changed from an appointed to an elected board. I mean, how do you think service or any programs that LTD now provides would be different?
Actually, it's user and voter input both is what the hope is, and that will make a better product. One of the letters in support that you'll receive from Frank Brodison, another citizen of the Springfield area and working in the Eugene area, talked about how elected boards lead to citizen involvement and heightened awareness and input. Appointed boards breed a lot less accountability. So we'd like to have an accountability system, and the example would be in situations where eminent domain comes into play and private property rights are in jeopardy there. So that's one area. But in the programming itself, it's really locally. It's a well-run company, and it is a business, and it needs to manage as such. But there needs to be a checks and balances, really, is what we're looking for.
Senator Castillo, I was just going to say, the people from Portland explained that the Metro chairman or president, Roman Rose, said, I receive calls tonight because it's a board that's elected above the transit, and I get on it right away because these are the people that elected me that are complaining. Mm-hmm. So there's accountability that they have to answer to these people when you're just appointed. Person appointed you is in Salem.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't answer to them. That's what I think.
On the other side of that, though, Madam Chair, if I may.
Sure.
I do have concerns about, I understand what you're saying about having, you state good reasons for wanting to have an elected board. I'm wondering, are you concerned at all about if it gets changed from an elected to an appointed board, about what happens with politicizing those positions you just said? What if it has to do with eminent domain or other issues that come up in the community, and you have people then making decisions, it does politicize who's going to be there then, whereas if you have the governor appointing who's going to be there and it being confirmed by the Senate, there's less chance that, that the local politics get involved in what's happening with decisions that are made there. Just wondering if you see how that works, how that plays out with politics getting involved, either more or less, if it's an appointed versus elected board.
My name is Don Mogensen. I live at 2536 North 15 from Springfield. I'm a member of the Eugene Association of Realtors and the Springfield Board of Realtors, and also I own the Mailbox of the Federal franchise in Springfield. And my feeling is that we have a fairly diverse community dividing Eugene and Springfield and some of the surrounding areas, which now are subject to the tax, which is levied by the board, and issues will come up that may be political between the two that are divided by the freeway, wanting certain types of transit in one side or the other. And I think the way the bill is presented will allow the various districts to elect people to represent the will of those districts. And I think that's an important fact, because the transit district now not only has the authority to tax, they have the authority to set the tax rate and the boundaries. And so they can expand them or contract them pretty much as they choose with some minimal control.
Okay, I want to get to the vote approval. Do you have more questions?
Yeah, I do, Madam Chair. I was wondering, if this, an election is set up, is it the county, would Lane County pay for the election, or who would pay for the election that would be established under this? Would it be Lane County? Okay. And I'm wondering, too, I know you talked about the taxing authority. I guess now, because this is under the legislature, that we have defined and limited the taxing authority, I'm sorry that I didn't study the bill as carefully as maybe I should have. I don't remember reading in here. Are there limitations that match what the limitations are on the taxing authority now for the, if it becomes an elected board?
The bill is fairly general in just how the, I think the, if I remember right, Secretary of State, someone in Salem anyhow, sets the boundaries of the district based on census information.
Mm-hmm.
The tricentennial or decentennial census, I think, and that's it. Their authority to tax probably would be controlled by whatever the statutes are. And frankly, I don't know the technicalities of those aspects. I think the more objectionable part to me is the fact that I don't have any input at all over the people who run that organization and what their particular philosophies or policies are regarding transit in that area. And I may or may not agree with what's happening, and that's probably material to this issue, but the fact that I personally would like that opportunity to have someone come forward and discuss some issues, you know, all the ways transit is changing in our entire state, and especially in our area, and the cost of those things that that will affect us for years to come.
And Senator Castillo, three from transit will be here to talk.
Oh, okay. I was just wondering. Okay.
Yeah, there you
I was wondering how the three work. All right.
Okay, thanks. Okay.
Thank you.
And I'm trying to at least have hearings so that if we want to later deal with this bill, we can, so, and we have a deadline.
Sure.
Thank you very much.
Linda Lynch and Roger Radak. And Roger Martin, why don't you all three come together? Go ahead.
Madam Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Roger Martin. I'm the Executive Director of the Oregon Transit Association, and perhaps I could serve best by giving you a historical background. I chaired the committee in the House in 1969, and most of you didn't pay a lot of attention to government, that originally passed this legislation. There are two kinds of public transit entities in Oregon. There are transportation districts, and we have about seven in the state of Oregon, and there are three transit districts. Two are organized under identical law. That's Lane Transit and TriMet. Salem Area Transit's operated under a separate law. The main difference, for those that don't pay a lot of attention to it, is that all of the transportation districts and Salem Area Transit are based on a property tax. Property taxes, and each of those, incidentally, have elected boards because the property tax is collected from all the residents of the community. In the case of TriMet and Lane Transit, those two boards do not collect a property tax. They instead rely for their local financing on a payroll tax assessed against businesses. And it was thought at the time in 1969, and it is still the thinking of most people in business, that if we're going to have a payroll tax, the people that pay it ought to have their option or their opportunity to be well represented on the board. And the way you do that is to allow the governor to make appointments. And every governor I have dealt with since Tom McCall, who was governor at the time, has always talked to local officials, local chambers of commerce, for the suggestions of who serves on those various boards. And they've worked very well. This bill has been up almost every session for the last 20 years, sponsored by one group or another. I think in this instance, the reason that the realtors are behind this is that Lane Transit, within the last year or so, and the attorney is here, can talk to, has instituted the professional part of the tax, which TriMet instituted a number of years ago, which is why you're not hearing anything TriMet right now. I don't want to bore you with all the figures. There are only three major transit systems outside of Oregon in the nation that have elected boards. All the rest are appointed. And I can give you background that will show you.
I want it as brief as possible because we don't plan to work the deal today.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm Linda Lynch with Lane Transit District. I've provided to the committee two letters. One is from our board president stating the LTD board's opposition to the bill and listing some good reasons, which Roger Sadak will enumerate. for you. Mm-hmm. The other letter is from the Eugene Marriott Chamber of Commerce, which has opposed this measure in the past in previous sessions. The Chamber's point is that they believe that the board now provides them the best opportunity to have representatives of the taxpaying group on the board. The only other comment I would like to make is that at LTD we believe we have an outstanding public involvement process that we even purchase display space in the Register Guard to advertise meetings and hearings, and we do a lot of direct mail in affected neighborhoods well beyond the route area. We've also done over 200 one-on-one meetings on new transit proposals within the last year alone. So I believe that we have an outstanding public involvement process.
Thank you. And Ms. Martin, I didn't mean I didn't want to hear from you, but just right now, because like you, I've heard a lot of this. I appreciate what you have to add. Yes, go ahead.
Madam Chair, I'm Roger Sadak. I'm here representing Lane Transit District. I'm a lawyer with Ronald Gallagher Sadak in Eugene. My firm pays the payroll tax, and I'm also a former member of the LTD Board of Directors. There's three reasons I'd like to present to you why I believe this bill is misguided. First, if it's not broke, don't fix it. There's nothing broke with the Lane Transit District. There's nothing broke with TriMet. Lane Transit District is one of the best-run transit districts in the United States. The letter we've submitted to you gives you some factual information on that. There is no hue and cry in the community to have an elected board. What you're hearing from the realtors group is pretty much limited to that group. This hearing room would be packed with people testifying in favor of this bill if it were otherwise. The point that they made concerning eminent domain, I believe, is just simply incorrect. Lane Transit District could not spend $1 of federal money if it did not have an extensive process it had to go through in order to condemn any property. There is a very public process for eminent domain. There is no reason for a radical, drastic change of this nature for something that's working well. Second point, the main reason you've been given for an elected board is only an elected board should have the power to tax. There's one big flaw with that argument. The transit district does not have the power to tax. The legislature created the tax. The legislature set the tax rate. The legislature said what should be taxed. All the transit district does is administer the tax. It collects the tax that's been set by the legislature. The transit district is not a legislature. It's more like an administrative agency. We elect legislators. We don't elect administrators. Third point, there is nothing in this bill, nothing that will improve transit service in the community. There's nothing that deals with the tax system in any way, shape, or form. If we have an elected board, we run a real serious risk that special interest groups will try to pack that board. This is not an election that's going to attract a lot of public attention. Anything could happen. People who want to cut service, who want to increase service, people who want to raise wages, who want to lower wages, all of those people might try to get on that board, and we could have chaos as a result. Appointment by the governor, I think, protects the community against that kind of circumstance. The governor can determine who would best advance transit policy within the community, and the board has always been selected from people who are representatives of the various districts in the community, who represent the businesses and the other payroll taxpayers and self-employment taxpayers, and who represent the transit system users.
Are you about finished?
Yes, I have just a quick point. I think this is an example of a government agency that is working extremely well. It's doing the job it was designed by this legislature to do, and I don't see any reason for a dramatic, drastic change of this
nature. Thank you. I just want to clarify one point before we close this public hearing, and that is that the last session that I've been here has been introduced by Senator Dwyer, and I never felt he was in the pocket of the realtors. It was other people that were kind of pushing him. I just wanted to clarify that. And I closed the public hearing on Senate Bill 1090, and I want to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 8. Thank you for coming, by the way. And I want to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 815. And Representative Gianella and Representative Leslie Lewis want to come up here. And Senator George, do you want to join them or
Well, I can't get from folks in the community. I'll just stay here and let them.
Okay, thanks.
All right. I have to go outside for just a minute.
Do you want to talk about the bill, Megan?
Madam Chairman and members of the committee, Senate Bill 815 requires specified money to be placed in state tollway accounts. It requires the Department of Transportation to begin environmental impact studies for certain toll roads projects. And also, I talked to the fiscal office right before the meeting. They didn't have a fiscal prior to this, but the information they had just received stated that there would be $24.5 million would come from the $1.5 million amount that this bill is requesting would be put into that account from the gas tax and rate mile.
Thank you. Representative Lewis, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Senator. Senators, it's a pleasure to be here today. And for the record, I'm Leslie Lewis. I'm the state representative for District 29. And with me today are Representative Gianella, who's in the district adjoining me. I represent Newbridge. She represents Dundee. And I also have with me today the mayor of Newbridge, Chuck Cox. In the audience, you'll be hearing later from the city administrator from Dundee, the executive director for the Newbridge Area Chamber, and one of our local businessmen, Dave Wiegand. And we also have with us at the podium here Dave Hogeberg, who is chair of the Yamhill County Parkway Committee, which has struggled for probably going on 10 years now, Dave, on a project that is very important to the citizens of Yamhill County. To give you a little background of why Senate Bill 815 is here with you today, and of course it is also co-sponsored by Senator Shannon and Senator George to represent again the Newbridge and Dundee area. The background on this bill, in 1995, our area came to the legislature with Senate Bill 626. And the purpose of Senate Bill 626 was to bring forward the concept of building toll roads in the state of Oregon, which is we have used tolling for bridges, but Oregon has not used toll roads, not in recent times. The reason our community came to this was not because we had any great love of the concept of toll roads, but frankly, we have a very great traffic problem and a very great need in Yamhill County on our Highway 99, which goes through the cities of Newbridge and Dundee and continues on down through the county. There are nearly 30,000 cars a day going through this area now, and it has not allowed the cities of Newbridge and Dundee to have any kind of downtown at all because we basically have a freeway going through our town. And because of that need, we brought forward Senate Bill 626 two sessions ago in 1995. And the bill started out applying to the state in general, and it was heard, first of all, of course, here in the Senate Transportation Committee. I believe Senator Shannon was a member of that committee at the time. And we didn't intend to make the bill project specific to our area, but because of concerns that were raised by a number of senators that were concerned about bringing the tolling concept to the state in general, Senate Bill 626 was narrowed down to apply to the Newbridge-Dundee bypass and later to apply to the Tualatin Sherwood Parkway. And in the 97 session, two other projects were added, the new bridge over to Longview in the state of Oregon, and an undefined project for the metro area. So currently in statute, those are the four projects in the state of Oregon that qualify for tolling. As part of Senate Bill 626, the language in Senate Bill 626 set up a state tollway account. And this would be an account that would could receive money from the state to get these projects going, but it would also, of course, receive the toll revenue back once these projects were underway. What we are requesting in Senate Bill 815 is that the tollway account be funded with a half-cent dedication of gas tax money, and as your staff accurately pointed out, that would be about $24.5 million for the biennium. And we anticipated this as an ongoing, much as we do with the modernization
dedication that's currently in statute where we have approximately $54 million per year going into modernization statutorily. And our thought was that this half a cent would continue going into the tollway account every year. In the beginning years of these projects could be bonded with the approximately $12 million a year that would be going into the tollway account. These projects could be bonded. And in the beginning years, the projects would use the state dollars, and state dollars would come out of the tollway account. But as the toll revenues increase, which that's what all the feasibility studies told us, was that in the first few years, the toll revenues would not be large enough to pay for the projects, but in the later years of the toll projects, the toll projects would actually generate more money than was needed for debt service and maintenance. And so in later years, the toll way account would be refunded, and actually there would be more money coming back into the tollway account than would be going out in debt service and maintenance. And so that's the concept of Senate Bill 815. There's also a discussion of a sum of federal money, and we did leave that blank, perhaps just a small amount of the current new federal monies that are coming into the state of Oregon from P21 could be put into the tollway account to jumpstart these projects.
Yes.
Certainly, sir.
And I want to move along because I think we support your idea. This actually will just move down to Ways and Means.
Okay.
They'll sort out the money.
Okay.
But what I wanted to ask you is, can you ask your congressmen and senators, U.S. senators, for a portion of the new T21 money?
Well, we have been, as you probably know, Senator Shannon, we have received some money from the T21 bill that passed last June that would go towards the environmental impact study, and that's about $375,000. And also we have gone out and raised local money from businesses in the community. The city of Newburgh has put money in. The city of Dundee has put money in. I believe McMinnville. As well. McMinnville has committed. The county government has committed to put money in. I believe now we've raised over $600,000 for the environmental impact study from the combination of these sources, and we are continuing to work with our congressional delegation as well as our senators.
Okay. Did someone want to ask Representative G. Miller?
Yes. Madam Chair and Committee, thank you for listening to this. Senate Bill 815 today. And for the record, my name is Julie Gianella, State Representative for District 38. I'm here to testify in support of Senate Bill 815. The people of my district need to have all the possibilities looked at to fix our traffic problem, especially in the smaller cities that are on Highway 18 and 99. These highways are being bogged down because of all the coastal and commuter traffic. And not only that, but the people are at a standstill using this as a freeway, but the freeway going through these cities is at a standstill. The people of Yamhill County have needed a bypass for some time, and they look at all the viable options, whether it's a toll road or a state-funded bypass. The problem seems to need to be fixed. And Senate Bill 815 is a step in the right direction.
Okay.
I thank you, and I urge you a due pass from this committee.
Okay, thank you. And Senator, you have a question?
I have a couple of questions. Representative Lois, I want to know if the federal money in the T21, is it dedicated to environmental studies of this project?
The current earmarked money that came with the T21 bill, the $375,000, is dedicated to the environmental study.
Mm-hmm. To this specific project?
Yes, it is.
Oh, it is?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. As you may know, the T21 money included a lot of earmarked projects, but it also included some a lot more general money. But there are a number of earmarked projects, and ours is one of them.
Another question. What is the official impact of the environmental study?
ODOT has told us, the Department of Transportation has told us that the environmental study will cost in the neighborhood of $2.5 to $3 million, of which, as I mentioned, we have, with the county federal money, we've raised a little over 600,000 of those dollars locally and county federal money. So the rest we are looking to get from the state of Oregon.
Oh, I see. So, so the state needs to put in the remaining. Did you say $3.5 million?
Well, the amount, if it was a $2.5 million environmental impact study, the state would need about $1.9 million from the state currently.
Mm-hmm. From gas tax money.
They're ready to go. Yeah. Or it could potentially come from the. From the combination of these sources, and we are continuing to work with our congressional delegation as well as our senators.
Okay. Did someone want to ask Representative Jean Ellis?
Yes, Madam Chair and Committee, thank you for listening to this Senate Bill 815 today. And for the record, my name is Julie Gianella, State Representative for District 38. I'm here to testify in support of Senate Bill 815. The people of my district need to have all the possibilities looked at to fix our traffic problems, especially in the smaller cities that are on Highway 18 and 99. These highways are being bogged down because of all the coastal and commuter traffic. And not only that, but the people are at a standstill using this as a freeway, but the freeway going through these cities is at a standstill. The people of Yamhill County have needed a bypass for some time, and they look at all the viable options, whether it's a toll road or a state-funded bypass. The problem seems to need to be fixed. The Senate Bill 815 is a step in the right direction.
Okay.
I thank you, and I urge you a due pass from this committee.
Okay, thank you. And Senator,
I have a couple of questions. Representative Lois, I want to know if the federal money in the T21, is it dedicated to environmental studies of this project?
The current earmarked money that came with the T21 bill, the $375,000, is dedicated to the environmental study.
Mm-hmm. To this specific project?
Yes, it is.
Oh, it is?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. As you may know, the T21 money included a lot of earmarked projects, but it also included some a lot more general money. But there are a number of earmarked projects, and ours is one of them.
Another question. What is the official impact of the environmental study?
ODOT has told us, the Department of Transportation has told us that the environmental study will cost in the neighborhood of $2.5 to $3 million, of which, as I mentioned, we have, with the county and federal money, we've raised a little over 600,000 of those dollars locally and county and federal money. So the rest we are looking to get from the state of Oregon.
Oh, I see. So, So the state needs to put in the remaining. Did you say $3.5 million?
Well, the amount, if it was a $2.5 million environmental impact study, the state would need about $1.9 million from the state currently.
Mm-hmm. From gas tax money.
Yes. Or it could potentially come from the other federal monies that were not earmarked.
Oh, I see. Mm-hmm. And this money is not to be repaid once the tolls are collected.
The toll money that would fund this transportation project would pay for approximately 40% to 50% of the construction of the project. The balance of the money for this project and also the Twelton Sherwood project would have to come from some other source, state, county, cities. But we do need to have a public partner. We can do the tolling, as I said, for about 40% or 50% of our construction costs. Okay.
Madam Chair?
Yeah.
Representative Lewis, basically, though, when at a certain point, this thing will begin to yield a profit above its cost, and it will continue to roll into the account. And the thought was is that it then becomes the springboard to build additional projects, get additional construction. Multnomah County, I know Senator Deeks doesn't want it, but maybe a bridge across the river.
Okay.
That ain't happening.
Okay, I want to move because I do want to move this and some other bills. Do you have something, please?
Madam Chair and Committee,
yes.
My name is Charles Cox. I'm the mayor of Newburgh, and I just wanted to briefly tell you how important this project is to our city. That you know we're really choking under the weight of this traffic and impacting the way that we're having to develop our city. We have a lot of great plans to build a really nice city in the future, but this road running through it is a big detriment to almost everything we do. We understand that the funding is a problem, and we're very glad to see this Senate Bill 815 because we think that may solve the problem. Plus, as a mayor of a city, I know in talking to other mayors, there are many mayors in my situation that are in towns with highways, state highways running through them that they don't have the revenue, and it's not the revenue sources out there to solve that problem, and they're devastating their cities, and they're going to continue to be that way. And we see this as the leading edge of a mechanism to solve a lot of people's problems down the road, and that we will begin to be helping some city some years from now to solve their problem with our resource here.
Thank you.
Can I ask one thing?
Yes.
Sure. If the Newburgh-Dundee bypass and the Tualatin and Sherwood Highway that you're all concerned about, right?
Madam Chair, Senator Dukes, if I could respond to that. Actually, there are now four projects, and one of them is the Long Beach Bridge.
The ones that you're all concerned about are those, and they're all in the bill. You skipped number three. You only did one, two, and four. And I understand that somebody was trying to help me while
I wasn't aware that we'd skipped you, Senator.
We skipped me. We skipped number three.
We skipped Metro.
Okay. But of the ones that you're concerned about is one and two, right? Those two particular. And if we lost the extra one that you concluded, that would be okay.
Senator, if Madam Chair, Senator Dukes, if you wanted to lose the extra one, that could be arranged, I'm certain.
Okay, thank you. You know, I think we have support, but I do want to hear the people that have testified against this. So,
I'm going to be about 30 seconds.
I lose Senator George at 4:30 and Duke, so that's
my fine. Name is Dave Hogberg. I am the representative from Yamhill County on the Yamhill County Parkway Committee. I think you've heard from me in other forums. I do support Senate Bill 815. You know, we've got a critical problem in transportation, one of which is that places to do particular facilities are rapidly going away. If we could putting off Newburgh-Dundee, it won't matter because there won't be any place to put it. So we think it places an emphasis that talks about moving all of these projects forward, subject to Senator Dukes' comments, in terms of moving environmental studies forward, locating right-of-ways, and it provides a long-term method of financing major projects. And we think it's good for Oregon ultimately when we try to do that. Thank you.
Good for the air, too. Carson will have to sit there.
Idle all day.
Okay, thank you. Thank you. Thanks. Chris Hagerbaum from the Oregon Environmental Council. Is Chris here? Thanks. She's against it.
Okay.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Chris Hagerbaumer. I'm the Air and Transportation Program Director for the Oregon Environmental Council, and I thank you for the opportunity to testify. OEC helped pass Senate Bill 626 in 1995, which authorizes the building of toll roads. It was our opinion then and is our opinion today that new roads should be financed primarily through toll revenues instead of through the gas tax and late mile tax revenues. The reason for that is that tolls can be set accurately to reflect the costs of construction and maintenance, as well as the marginal cost of congestion. Gas taxes, on the other hand, are not true road user fees because not all purchasers of gasoline place equal demand on the system, and road construction and maintenance costs vary widely from region to region. However, we do have a big concern about this bill, Senate Bill 815, because with the Newburgh-Dundee bypass and the Tualatin-Sherwood Highway, neither project can be financed 100% by tolls. Preliminary studies have found that tolls would cover about 45% of the cost of the Newburgh-Dundee bypass and about 35% of the cost of the Tualatin and Sherwood Highway. This is basically an indication that drivers don't want these roads enough to pay for them. I'm not sure that they need to pay for them 100%, but to us, 35 or 45% is simply too low. Furthermore, the Senate Bill 815 circumvents that what's in statute 383.0154 that states that ODOT shouldn't begin any environmental or other types of studies until it's found that these toll road projects will either pay for themselves completely or that the state has found that there is a great enough need to justify the use of public funding. So we're unable to support this bill.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I have, at least in the Dundee bypass, early on, and we're talking to speaker group, I have some of the same concerns when I listened to ODOT and saw the numbers. But it seems to me, having followed that one, because it's always in the same hearing with the Astoria bypass, so I get to listen to all their stuff while they get to listen to mine, that traffic has been increasing by leaps and bounds on those roads, and that at some point in time we're going to have to build those. I've been very impressed by the commitment of the community, who they've come in large numbers to say we want a toll, which means still, and when we get to the portion on the bridge, which is the Lewis and Clark Bridge, they have not done the same thing. But there's a lot of commitment there on the part of the community, and the numbers are increasing, which is why as long as we get number four out of here, I'm willing to support the bill, because I think we have to build a thing, and there's a good chance that we're going to get to the numbers. And what they're asking for here is an environmental impact statement. So I guess I'm asking you to think about, we're really only talking about two projects here, I think, and they're projects that are probably really good projects, and where the numbers, the traffic volume numbers are growing, that moving to the environmental impact area is a stage is not an unreasonable thing to do. Now, if they were asking that we pay to build them, then we might be having another conversation, but that's not where this bill goes to yet. And it is my intention when we get to a work session to move the third project they're asking for here off of it, because it has not progressed to that stage of community support and the other things. It may at some point, but it isn't there yet.
Okay. So, Senator George.
Thank you, Minister. Chris, one reason I was aggressively supporting Senator Duke's farm-to-market road statement the other day was because what has happened because of the fact that this bottleneck has developed. Now, two casinos, in addition to all the people from Clackamas and Washington, Multnomah County, who would love to go to the coast, and if I was necessary, Madam Chair, I could have packed this place with people from the coast saying, please build this road. A couple of things. What has happened because this road is beyond its capacity is we're now diverting traffic, and I have heard this in chamber meetings all up and down the coast. People don't come through Newburgh-Dundee anymore. They don't want to risk their life. They now come through Marion County through downtown Salem. So we'll see increasing traffic problems here because we backed up the traffic. Also, relative to the road and the farm-to-market road, the reason that I would support that is because we now have Lafayette Avenue and Cheney Road have become a bypass. And I see Senator Representative Lewis shaking her head in agreement. It is major traffic, particularly on the weekends. I've had folks in Lincoln City tell me that they know that you go through Carlton and Lafayette. And now, to save time, it's way out of the way if you're familiar with the route. So I think it is time to do the road. An interesting thing, too, wind it up, is that I've seen the preliminary environmental impact. It looks good. It looks very good that this has no major environmental problem. I think it should go.
Thank you.
I want to really move on.
But I don't know if he wants to testify for it or against it, but Dave Barenberg from the League of Oregon Cities would like to testify, and Doug Tyndall from ODOT, I would like to have a brief comment from you before we move the bill.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Dave Barenberg from League of Oregon Cities. I've been to meetings in Dundee and Newburgh about this issue. I clearly see the need for this project to move forward, as the need for other projects around the state that are really critical for maintaining the viability of the economy and the affordability of our state. One thing that this bill does do, though, is it also takes from cities and counties from the apportionment that we currently receive out of the highway fund. It takes our share of a half cent of the highway fund, which is around 40% currently, that goes to cities and counties, so it would have the impact of reducing the amount that cities and counties receive from the highway fund by $10 million a biennium. And I just wanted to bring that to the attention of the committee.
But it has to, this bill today is going to Ways and Means. Mm-hmm. They'll wrestle that out down there.
Okay, I just want to make the committee aware. Thank you.
You have to realize that this is generating a minimum of 45% brand new dollars. So if you think about that even half long term, you start gaining on this thing by having brand new dollars enter into the equation. Do you agree with that?
Madam Chair, Senator George, the one thing that gives me the most heartburn is trying to cannibalize the membership of the League of Oregon Cities, because cities across the state are facing major needs and are trying to address them the best way they can. Some cities are trying to leverage private investment by being able to pony up local dollars and are attempting to do that. But right now we're not able to maintain our existing system, and it's costing us a lot more in the long run, 4 to 5 times greater if we don't have the funds to address the problems now. The problem I think we have here is that there are pressing needs to try to do some of the vital new work that's necessary, but at the same time we have to maintain the existing system. So we see it as a game, and not as a zero-sum game, where we need to add additional money to be able to do some of these things, but also we need to maintain the existing system, and we're not being able to do that with the existing revenue, and this cuts into the existing revenue.
Madam Chair, I don't think he understood the question.
Mr. Senator, we want to move before we get the other ones. We want to move. I don't think we're going to come to agreement. Yeah, go ahead.
Senator Shannon, members of the committee, good afternoon. Doug Tindall, named the Senator from the Oregon Department of Transportation. Senator, I will be very brief. Highlighted the issues of pressing needs statewide across the state. There's no denying that these two are pressing needs. It's a question of priorities. This bill indicates what those priorities would be. I might add one thing that hasn't come up yet. As Senator Dukes pointed out, on one of the projects, the Lewis and Clark Bridge project, that maybe we're not ready to go to the environmental impact statement stage yet. It's actually WashDOT owns that bridge, so we need their concurrence too, so we'd have to work that issue. I'm also told that on the Sherwood, 12th and Sherwood bypass, that because of recent developments in Sherwood, actual development along the roadway, that there's some question now about the appropriate alignment for that piece of roadway, and that our people feel that we may not be ready to go to the environmental impact statement that's required by this bill on that project. We're much closer on that project, but we may not be ready. We may have some difficulty implementing it.
If the prison goes at Day Hill Road, that would kind of put a kink in it, too.
Yes, there are those issues. So that's all I have to say.
Okay, thank you.
Get those points across and get out of your way.
Yeah. Do you want the bill?
Yeah, but I really need to make a point. This represents less than 0.8% of gross revenue.
Okay, thanks. Thank you.
As ODOT prioritizes the urgent needs of road projects in our state, would you see these two as being number one, number two out of all the urgent needs that we have in our state?
Senator Shannon, Senator Castillo, I think that we do that. It's not ODOT alone. It's a public process that has identified those needs, and those projects are not included in the current STIP as we walk the delicate balance between needs and funding. So from an ODOT perspective, well, we're not going to draw the priorities, but we're going to draw them rather out of the public process, and they have not yet come to the top.
That's my concern with this bill, Madam Chair, that it isn't part of the public process. It's comes in a different process, and I just have a concern about how we're going about prioritizing these projects over a very huge public process that we put together to rank how we're going to do projects. And so I understand, I'm sure these are very much needed, but we have a whole state of very serious needs, and I'm just concerned about that. And I'm also concerned about it taking away money from the cities. I know that they're really grappling with a lot of needs, too. But, I mean, I'm concerned about that.
Thank you. I just want to say with the budget, $2.5 billion is a very small portion of it. And I don't know if you've heard from the people from Redmond. They've gathered together $12 million because of unresponsiveness on the SIP and things, and so they're coming in asking for plasma and MoDOT to do a huge project. So sometimes the local initiative mandates a little different because they're not getting response.
Madam Chair, I think we could take care of that by increasing the gas tax and giving some more funding to cities and counties around our state and help them with all their needs.
Well, if we get it, we'll come back next time and see if that's where it went. That's what they were thinking about.
Yeah. Question, Doug. With the commission's decision to spend 80% of the money available spent on preservation, these two projects are never going to get to the top of your list, are they?
Senator Shannon, Senator Dukes, I think that as Commission Chair Hewitt has indicated that there are many unmet needs on those, what he calls the B and C list, the modernization list, that you're right, we can't get to without additional funding.
Thank you. I want to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 815 and open a public work session on Senate Bill 815, and Senator Dukes would like to delete a little bit.
Yes, Madam Chair.
All right.
I move that we amend Senate Bill 815 on line 8 by deleting the sub 4 at the end of the line.
To put the period after the 2?
Yes. I guess we
put
just say and. No, the and would move between the 1 and 2.
You know what would work? If you just deleted the 2 and changed the 4 to a 2, either way, 1 and 2.
You need to still... Yeah.
Delete the 2 and the comma. You just mm-hmm. have it 1 and 2.
All right.
Two.
That works.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Delete the comma, the 2, and change the 4 to a 2. Okay. Did you ask that as an amendment?
Yes, I did.
Okay. Is there any discussion?
Is that an environmental council amendment?
No, that's Senator Duke. She wants her bridge out.
It
may come someday,
but not now. Okay. And so without objection, Senator George moved Senate Bill 815 to the floor as amended with a
rule.
To raise and means, to raise and means. To raise and means. With a due pass recommendation, is there discussion? The clerk will call the roll.
Senator Castillo?
No.
Senator
Duke?
Aye.
Senator George?
Yes.
Senator
Ely?
Aye.
Having received the majority, it will go to ways and means with a DPAS recommendation. Close them. Most questions on Senate Bill 815. Thank you, everybody. And to those people that came to testify, I'm sorry, but you do have your bill. No, they're going to do that. Okay, the next one that we're going to hear, we need to do a little work right here. I want to open a possible reconsideration and work session of Senate Bill 908, and we can explain that, shall I?
We voted about a committee last vehicle, and there was a request for an amendment by Senator Ely. We voted on it. You all voted on it. And so we want to bring that back in so we can place an amendment in that that would allow the gas stations to produce their own signs that would take away the large fiscal for of that.
Okay. I need Senator George back in here for a minute.
I'll go for reconsideration.
Okay.
I don't know that I'm sending the bill.
Yeah, that, just bring the bill back. Would you?
Madam Chair, I would move that
the committee reconsider the vote by which it passed out the Bill 99 way. That's your first motion, is reconsideration.
Right, without objection.
Okay. Now you're on your own.
Okay, Senator Yeast moved that we reconsider the vote on that we did. Yeah, we suspended the rules. Senator Yeast, now where's our script? Would like to move to reconsider the vote by which Senate Bill 908 was sent to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Okay, we want to reconsider that, right?
Right.
Okay, is there any objection?
What is this? To the amendment?
No.
Oh,
no, just bring it back.
Just to bring it back?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought we just did that.
That was to suspend the rule.
Oh,
now we have to bring it back.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Now, do we need to call the roll on that one?
Without objection.
No. Yeah, with those of the opinion, we should reconsider the vote. That we should suspend the rules. Yes, we do have to call the roll.
Yes.
Those of the opinion that we should reconsider the vote by which we sent Senate Bill 908 to the floor with a due pass will vote aye. Those opposed will vote no. And an aye vote will just bring it back to our committee. There are no amendments ready.
Yeah.
Okay. Discussion. The clerk will call the roll.
Senator Castillo.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Having passed unanimously, the bill is back in our possession, and I'm going to close the work session on Senate Bill 908.
Yes. Madam Chair, do you want to tell what amendments what was?
No, when we have the amendments, then you can.
Oh.
We don't have the amendments in our possession yet.
Okay.
I'll see you for draft.
See you for draft. Okay, thank you. All right.
I have a dash one. Does that matter?
Uh-huh.
I have a dash one.
No. Okay.
Okay. Well, dash one was adopted. We don't want to show the percentage. We want to show the
that was adopted.
Okay.
Okay. Now I'm going to have a public hearing. Okay. I'm going to have a public hearing on Senate Bill 877 and a public hearing on Senate Bill 1216. Aren't they both related?
One transfers
the department.
What the other one does change the law regarding the class to be Ultra India. So they both deal with Ultra India system.
Okay, well then we'll just have a public hearing on Senate Bill 877.
Mm-hmm.
And do we have that one here?
Yeah.
We need Senator Tarno too.
Tarno?
He's up in judiciary. Senator Tarno in judiciary. This is his bill. But let's have... Oh, no. 877.
All right. Senate Bill 877 prohibits operation of certain Class 2 all-terrain vehicles on highways and that's punishable by maximum fine of $300.
Okay. And Robert Greenstreet and Arnold Dryland, would you like to come up? And there's no opposition, so. Hi.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Bob Greenstreet. I've been involved in all-terrain vehicle use in Oregon for the last 30 years. In regards to Senate Bill 877, I just wanted to remind the committee that last Wednesday, you folks passed Senate Bill 878. Senate Bill 878 changed language in the preamble of ORS 821-200. And I want to make sure that this new bill, 877, changes language in the text of that same statute. Now, would this wipe out what has already been passed? I just, kind of want to make sure that what we passed today doesn't wipe out what we passed last Wednesday.
There would be a conflict amendment at the end of the session if there was a problem.
At the end of the
usually at the end of the session they do conflict amendments.
Okay. We would catch that. Legislative Council would catch that. Okay.
That was my only concern with that bill.
Okay.
My name is Arnold Ryland, and unless any of you have any questions on this, we're short on time. Why? It's just clearing up an omission that we missed at the time the original legislation was written as to where off-road vehicles could or could not operate. Somehow the Class 2 vehicles were forgotten.
Okay, for some reason I don't have that bill.
Madam Chair, we're doing 12-15.
We're doing 877. Do you have a comment, Senator George, on 877? Yeah?
Yeah.
I don't have that. Oh, here it is. And they're trying to change. Okay, it sounds reasonable, doesn't it? Okay. I'm going to, I'll wait till Senator Tarnow gets down here before I work it. But I'm going to close the public hearing on 877 and open a public hearing on Senate Bill 1216. Okay. And what does this bill do?
Senate Bill 1216, Madam Chair, members of the committee, transfers all terrain vehicle programs, regulations, and monies appropriated from the Department of Transportation to the State Parks and Recreation Department.
Okay. You're still there? You want to say a quick word? Or?
Some of the concerns, and I have written testimony, Madam Chair, members of the committee.
Mm-hmm. Do you need your name?
Oh, I'm sorry again. Mm-hmm. My name is Robert Greenstreet, and my address is Field Box 965 for Dallas. And I've been involved in off-highway vehicle recreation for the past 30 years. The concerns that...
So 877 prohibits operation of certain Class 2 all-terrain vehicles on highways and a punishable by maximum fine of $300.
Okay. And Robert Greenstreet and Arnold Ryland, would you like to come up? And there's no opposition, so. Hi.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Bob Greenstreet. I've been involved in all-terrain vehicle use in Oregon for the last 30 years. In regards to Senate Bill 877, I just wanted to remind the committee that last Wednesday, you folks passed Senate Bill 878. Senate Bill 878 changed language in the preamble of ORS 821-200. And I want to make sure that this new bill, 877, changes language in the text of that same statute. Now, would this wipe out what has already been passed? I just, you know, kind of want to make sure that what we passed today doesn't wipe out what we passed last Wednesday.
There would be a conflict amendment at the end of the session if there was trouble.
At the end of the
session, they do conflict amendments.
Okay. We would catch that. Legislative Council would catch that. Okay.
That was my only concern with that bill.
Okay.
My name is Arnold Ryland, and unless any of you have any questions on this, we're short on time. Why? It's just clearing up an omission that we missed at the time the original legislation was written as to where off-road vehicles could or could not operate. Somehow the Class 2 vehicles were forgotten.
Okay, for some reason I don't have that bill.
Madam Chair, we're doing 1215.
We're doing 877. Do you have a comment, Senator George, on 877? Yeah? I don't have that. Oh, here it is. And they're trying to bring... Okay, it sounds reasonable, doesn't it? Okay. I'm going to, I'll wait till Senator Tarnow gets down here before I work it. But I'm going to close the public hearing on 877 and open a public hearing on Senate Bill 1216. Okay. And what does this bill do?
Senate Bill 1216, Madam Chair, members of the committee, transfers all terrain vehicle programs, regulations, and monies appropriated from the Department of Transportation to the State Parks and Recreation Department.
Okay. You're still there? You want to say a quick word?
some of the concerns, and I have written testimony, Madam Chair, members of the committee.
Mm-hmm. Do you need your name?
Oh, I'm sorry again. Mm-hmm. My name is Robert Green Street, and my address is PO Box 965, Corvallis. And I've been involved in off-highway vehicle recreation for the past 30 years. The concerns that a lot of the people have in transferring state agencies, most of us feel that state parks and recs would be an advocate for our sport. They're a recreational organization as opposed to a road authority. And they think it would definitely be a move for the plus. However, they do have some lingering doubts from dealing with other state agencies. And if there's some way that further reassurances could be given them, I know it would make the program much better in the future. In the past, if we look at the Senate bill, then again, to be brief, in Section 7 on the bill on page 2, starting line 9, it talks about the State Parks and Recreation Department shall issue or provide for issuance of a Class 3 all-terrain vehicle operating permit, etc. This basically is a safety education and training course that our kids have to take before they can legally ride these Class 3 vehicles. And this is really a good plus. And as Madam Chair, if you remember back in 1995, we came before the same committee, and you folks agreed with us then that this was really a good idea, and you made a law, you passed it. It became ORF 821-182 that directed the Department of Transportation shall issue or provide for issuance of Class 3 all-terrain permits. It is now 3.5 years later. We still do not have one single class, one single item that trains our kids for safety on these machines. We would like to see some sort of assurance that if another state agency is going to be directed to do this, that maybe they need to come in and talk to you folks and give you a progress report 12 months after this becomes law.
Okay. Just a minute. Senator Charno is here. We're doing the Senate Bill 1216. Before Senator Charno speaks and then hands the microphone, I would just like to say that according to this sign-up, the Parks and Recreation support this, and ODOT doesn't oppose it, and it seems to be, is that right? Okay, they were going, everybody wants this to happen, so Senator Charno, as soon as you say your piece, we'll probably do it.
Very short, good bill should pass, Madam Chair.
I want that from you. It moves along. Is that okay?
As a matter of fact, it is very popular.
Very popular idea. And we already did 877, your other one, and it's good one, too. Okay, thanks, Ben. Mr. Lockwood is already, if you don't testify. Okay. Okay, thank you. I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 1216, and now we're going to the rest of the meeting. Is there a pre-one? Can we send it to Ways and Means?
Does it need to go?
The fiscal office expressed some concern as they just got the
two. Oh, that's right.
From the Parks Department and Transportation that they have to move it. Stuff that needs to be kind of juggled around to meet.
Okay,
so that was just a subcommittee. Their recommendation, but
I don't care what you're
doing. You know?
Why does they have to go to Ways?
Because fiscal office thought that they had to juggle some money back from one to the other because they're going to switch responsibilities.
And ODOT's all nodding.
And they're all nodding. They want it to happen.
And the parks are nodding.
And the parks are nodding. So
is this going to Ways and Means?
We make the motion. That's what we'll do. Okay?
Mm-hmm. I just have one question.
Yes,
sir. If it was Dash 1 Amendment, I was wondering, was that ODOT? The emergency class?
It's mine.
Oh, it's yours. You're an RA. That made him care. Well, that good night to get rid of you.
Okay. I'm opening a work session on Senate Bill 877.
I have a question.
Oh, you do?
Yes. Okay. I have a question for Parks. Are they committed to set up training classes for issuing
a license
within a short period of time? How short?
Maybe they need to come up. I don't know. Here he comes. Okay.
You heard my question.
Yes, I did, Madam Chair. Thank you for the opportunity to testify. This is Jim Lockwood, Oregon Parks and Recreation Department. Madam Chair, Senator Yee, I can't really give you a specific amount of time, but yes, we are committed to that. We believe that that's an important part of the sport, and it's in the best interest of everybody involved. So I can't give you a certain number of weeks or months.
Mm-hmm. What is the... Madam Chair, what is a reasonable amount of time would engage if you can have the courses set?
That's exactly what I would have said. Senator Yee, my hunch is 6 months sounds reasonable. You know how it takes a certain amount of time to go through the rulemaking process or the development of a curriculum process or anything like that, and we certainly need to work with the community of the off-road vehicle folks. I would say, though, in reference to Senator George's question, or no, Senator Duke that was mentioning the emergency clause, if the bill is amended to take effect sooner, the sooner we will do that as far as the education
is. Is 6 months' time reasonable to you people?
Senator Shannon, or Madam Chair, and Senator Yee, I would say 6 months is cutting it a little bit on the short side because there's only one trained Class 3 instructor in the state at this time. The instructors have to be trained as well as setting up the class, but 6 months is a real good goal to go for.
Okay. They have a good relationship and they want to cooperate. I think they'll be all right.
Mm-hmm.
You got it on the record?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. Okay, Senator, you want to move into the floor?
One work session.
Yeah.
I'm up to amendment.
Yeah. Well, I'm on 877. Give me amendment. Oh, they would say, okay, then I will open the work. Close the work. The work I
did.
But I thought I did it on 877. Okay, then. I'm going to close any other things that were open. We're going to open a work session on Senate Bill 1216. And do you have an amendment, Senator Dick?
Madam Chair, I have a dash one.
Okay.
The emergency one, so I'll move the dash one amendment to Senate Bill 1216 dated 4799.
Okay, without objection. And now,
Chair, I'll move Senate Bill 1216 to the floor with a request that the President of the Senate send it to Ways and Means.
Okay, with a due pass.
With a due pass.
Discussion? Yeah. There's a referral to Ways and Means.
Yeah, we can't refer, but we can ask.
We can ask. Okay, the clerk will call the roll.
Did you say amend it 1216?
Okay, the clerk will call the roll.
Aye.
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 Aye. Aye. Aye. Received a majority. Does somebody want to say it?
Does this go to Ways and
Means? Yes. After the floor.
After the
vote, yes.
I think the recommendation is that we do name a carrier in case the President decides to send it
to us this report. That's what I meant. Does anyone like to carry it? Okay. Senator George, carry the bill. Okay. Then we're going to close the work session on Senate Bill 1216, open a work session on Senate Bill 877.
This does not have to go to Ways and Means.
Right? Correct. Okay. Would someone like to move this one?
Which one is a Class 2?
Buggy or Jeep or sport utility vehicle.
Well, I thought those were illegal.
Okay. No, street legal.
Okay.
Basically,
I thought they were illegal today because we run into the issue of the beach being a road and we have a stretch of beach you can drive on and we try to tell folks they have to keep these things off of them.
Okay. Okay.
They're not. They will be.
Okay.
Oh, I move Senate Bill 877 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Discussion? The clerk will call the roll.
Aye.
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 Aye. Aye. Having received unanimous vote, we'll go forward with the do-pass recommendation. And Senator Yee wants to carry this one.
Okay,
Senator Yee will carry it. That closes our work session on Senate Bill 877.
And
Mr. Charnow. Oh, I forgot about that. And let Senator Charnow, because these are his bill. This is his bill. So unless he wants to, okay. Okay, we need to open a public hearing. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.
A public hearing on Senate Bill 1296.
Just for clarification, ask him if he doesn't carry out there.
Okay.
Good afternoon, Madam Chairman, members of the committee.
Yeah.
My name is Ted Hughes, representing today a new corporation by the name of T-Free Corporation, headquartered in Bellevue, Washington. I've just passed to you a brochure on a new product that's not hit the waterways before. It is legal in 42 states to operate this remote control jet ski, and we hope that it will make it 43. This company, in order to ensure safeguards, if you look at Senate Bill 1296, you'll notice that on line 22, we said, however, every such boat shall comply with all other applicable provisions of this chapter. So it has the same safety requirements as jet skis and anything else. Well, I noticed there was opposition to the bill from the State Marine Board, and I want to assure them that this bill has a subsequent referral to Ways and Means. They're probably going to talk about increased costs. We've already talked to the Ways and Means people about it, so if you could move it on to Ways and Means, we would take care of the State Marine Board's concerns. I see that there's opposition from the sheriff here. I don't know how they can oppose them because this has never been used before on waters of any state. They are now demonstrating it in California and Washington and elsewhere. But we needed this enabling legislation to allow this company to market this product in Oregon, and I ask that you favorably send it to Ways and Means.
Yeah. Mr. Hughes, I met this man, and he said they only can operate, like, in glass conditions early in the morning. Any choppiness in the water, they're out of business.
That's correct, Madam Chair. It's a small jet ski vehicle where the water skier has a 40-foot rope behind it, where a normal water skier would have 75-foot rope, and he has total visibility because it's low profile in the water. He cannot operate in choppy waters. It'll be operated mostly by people that currently water ski, and they will not need a boat to do so. It's a small profile. They can see ahead of it. If anything happens, they fall, the engine stops, and that small flag in front comes up 6 feet. And it will hold the skier if the skier has to hold on to it for any reason. Exciting new product. They're going public. I would say you ought to buy some stock in it. That's what I'm going to do. All right. So I ask the committee please to send this to Ways and Means so we can see if there is a budget problem with the State Marine Board.
Okay.
I thank you.
If they, after they testify, maybe you can clear something. You'd like to say yes.
She said these have never operated on any body of water.
No, they have not. They're legal in 42 states, and they were going to operate way back when a Canadian company first got the got them. This was 10, 12 years ago. A Canadian company was all set to market them. They went bankrupt, and now we have a new corporation headed by Ted Achilles. Do you remember him? State Representative Ted Achilles from Lake Oswego area. We have a new company that has the patents that have already sold 1,900 of these when they unveil them at boat shows and trade shows. Mm-hmm. So they're very excited about the project.
Well, how old do you have to be, Ted, to operate one of these?
The same age as operating a jet ski. We put in on line 22, 23, the same safe provisions that would be necessary to operate any boat or jet ski in the state. I would imagine the State Marine Board is going to want to do rules and regulations around these, and of course this law will allow them to do that.
And how old would that be?
I have no idea.
I was wondering, it seems to me that a jet ski where, and I've never ridden one, but where you're you're operating the controls, when you let go, they cut out. It seems to me that there would be, and I understand from glancing at this, that it's supposed to cut out when you fall down. I guess I would be more concerned about something malfunctioning when no one was on board than I would be it malfunctioning when you had someone on board above a certain age. I guess I'm thinking, and if my 12-year-old can operate one of these things, I'd be more concerned about him in a situation like this than on a jet.
The entire controls are start and stop with the handles.
And it has a homing device, so it comes back to the handle where
you
are.
If you fall in the water, it has a homing device on its
head. What if there's something in between it and you?
Well, maybe it'll go around it. I don't know.
Well, you're only 40 feet behind it. You're only 40 feet behind it. Low profile remote control. There's probably not going to be anything between you and the rig.
Well, on a really busy lake, it would be.
It won't work on a busy lake.
But
it's legal on a busy lake.
But they want smooth water. Most of the operators that operate this go early in the morning when the water is smooth, because it does not operate in choppy water at all.
And that's one of the reasons I'm also wondering what age you have to be to operate one of these, because it would be one thing for an adult to understand that you shouldn't operate under certain conditions. It would be another thing for a kid to understand that.
I see the same requirements that we now have for a jet ski.
Well, I know, but
and I don't know
has an operator out of them. This thing doesn't. Why do you want this to get away from me?
Well, because we thought that there might be a budget impact for the State Marine Board, and I see two State Marine Board people have signed up against it, probably for that reason, and we'd like to take care of their concerns in Asia. That's why we recommended it go there.
Okay.
That's what I mean.
Madam Chair, kids, this is to let go of the rope is just like sliding off the back of a jet ski. Almost exactly the same thing happens. The engine goes to idle. This actually shuts off.
It shuts off.
Okay. There's a couple other things that I'm sure that I noticed about this device, and the fact that it's powered by a four-stroke motor instead of a two-stroke, which means we're going to have less pollution than you would have with a jet ski. And it looks like something I wish I had.
I think jet skiers, I think people at water ski are really going to love these things. If I don't water ski, so I'm never going to have one.
Madam Chair, this statute doesn't say anything about a boat designed to cut out when the person skiing behind it falls down. To any boat, the design of which does not provide for carrying an operator or any other person on board, and is actually operated by the person being towed. None of those, I mean, I don't know what else is coming, but this is really broad language.
Well,
I mean, this company is up and running, and we know about them, but we've given language broad enough for other inventive folks to come along.
Well, let's see what happens next. If you want to amend it to tighten it up, we'll do that, if you are comfortable with it. Okay, let's hear the other side. Thanks. Paul Dawson from the State Marine Board. Peter Van Dyke from the Multnomah County Sheriff.
And John
good.
Oh, you did?
Oh, well,
the
okay.
Sheriff from I didn't see. Yeah, good. Okay, go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'm Paul Don Heppner, Director of the Marine Board. The Marine Board would like to go on record as being strongly opposed to Senate Bill 1296, which creates an exemption in our boating safety laws regarding water skiing, which would permit operation of self-controlled boats. The exemption would create a situation where there is no operator on board the boat, no observer to keep an eye on the skier and other boating traffic. We don't believe such an exemption is a good idea from a boating safety perspective. Current law does require an observer who's in a position to continuously observe the quote person being towed, and I would underscore the word continuously observe the quote person being towed. Having that observer allows the boat operator to give their full attention to the control and operation of the boat, where the boat's going. This allows them to comply with ORS 830-335, which requires a boat operator to keep a proper lookout at all times while underway. There's a fundamental inconsistency between being engaged in a sport such as water skiing and trying to, at the same time, operate the boat. which is why we have an observer require in boats, so that the boat operator stays focused on other boats and traffic, what's going on around them. It's why we require an observer, so that the observer can keep an eye on the skier and other boating traffic as well.
Excuse me, I have a question. When they're on a jet ski, who's the observer?
Madam Chair, on a jet ski, you have to have an observer as well. And a personal watercraft, which is what we call them officially, has to be capable of holding three people, the operator, the observer, and the person being towed.
You have no single, you can't do a single jet ski in Oregon?
You can't tow a water skier with a single jet ski.
No. I meant, those self-operated ones. A single person can't go out on those?
As long as they're not towing a skier, they can.
Madam Chair, a person can operate a personal watercraft solo.
Okay.
But to tow a skier, they need to have an observer on board to keep an eye on the skier. In addition, it has to be a three-person capacity so that when the skier falls, the craft can pick up the skier and return safely to shore. Personal watercraft, and these are not personal watercraft by definition, because these are not intended to be operated by the person sitting on the vessel. So they are outside the bounds of personal watercraft. Consequently, there is no minimum age requirement to use these in Oregon. Anybody of any age could currently
use. Just a second. If you're, isn't there a current age for, a lower age for a boat, if you're considering this a boat, isn't there a minimum age for operating a boat?
Currently, no. Although we are trying to address that in the House at present.
Okay.
In addition, the function of an observer in water skiing activity is to put that person, the observer, in a position to raise the skier down flag when the skier is in the water to warn the boaters of the fact that the person is down in the water and to avoid running over the skier. While this device does have a flag that pops up, it is not manned, and there's no one there calling attention to the fact that there is a skier down in the water. This bill would exempt these craft from the requirement for a skier down flag, even though they have it. The last section of the bill basically removes the requirement for skier down flags to self-operated craft. So we have a situation where there's no boat operator, no observer, and no skier down flag required under this bill. There's no operator maintaining proper lookout, no observer to assist the skier should the skier become injured in a fall, and no requirement to warn other boaters when the skier is down. Because of those changes, we can't support the bill from a boating safety perspective. Our waterways are becoming increasingly crowded, and now more than ever, we need to ensure that boat operators maintain proper lookout and observers do their job in keeping an eye on the skier and keeping an eye on other boating traffic to ensure that water skiing is a safe sport. We don't have a fiscal objection to the bill. We didn't put a fiscal impact statement in on it. Consequently, I'm not aware of why it would be referred to Ways and Means Committee.
Let me ask you a question. Have you ever seen one of these operate?
I have not, but I'm familiar with the fact that they have been around in various shapes and form. And as the previous speaker indicated, there was an attempt to market these back in the 70s and early 80s. They didn't go anywhere, much to our relief, they went away. Now they're trying to make a comeback. Based on the 1988 state reference guide to boating laws, there's 14 other states that do not allow self-controlled water skis.
Okay.
I'd be happy to answer any questions if anybody might have.
I don't have any. Go ahead.
My name is Peter Van Dyke. I'm a lieutenant from Multnomah County Sheriff's Office, currently assigned as the manager of our River Patrol unit. I originally was asked to come down here by Sheriff Noley to speak for the Oregon State Sheriff's Association that they oppose the change in the law for safety reasons. I'm a little distressed that, we haven't seen or heard or seen the brochures. It seems to me that the reasonable thing would have been to bring it to the Marine Board so any questions the Marine Board had could have been asked. There could have been demonstrations.
Sure.
Safety concerns could have been dealt with at that time instead of now we finally see a brochure, or we've seen the brochure, we still haven't. I would hope the argument that 42 other states allow it isn't going to be acceptable to the people in Oregon. The reason the sheriffs are concerned, and I'm concerned as the River Patrol manager, is I'm the one and my people are the ones that have to clean up the mess. And I can tell you from personal experience, I've water skied for 40 years. You do fall, and you can hurt yourself falling. If people would try to use this in the Columbia or Willamette River, where our main patrol areas are, they could be separated because of the currents of the rivers. Not all people use equipment reasonably, and I would hope that until there's some experience with these in other states, that we should not allow these in this state. We have enough problems with personal watercraft and their usage and accidents as it is now. Thank you.
Madam Chair, Senator Governor Committee, my name is John Reichelplatz, County Sheriff. I also represent Oregon State Sheriff's Association Marine Affairs Committee as its chair. We do not have an experience with these, and we've been just recently become aware of it and try to call into other states that have, and we don't have a lot of history of the usage of these where they are legal in other states. We've never seen the vessel operate. Some of the very same things that make it acceptable by the presenter about a low profile and giving the skier a lot of visibility, we don't have anything to dispute that, but we are concerned that that same low profile would be an issue for other boaters and other users out on our waterways. We have increasing, and then even in our county, in Clatsop County, we have increasing conflicts between boat users, jet ski operators, bass fishermen, water skiers. Now, on our riverways, we have constant complaints from the bar pilots and the river pilots for added enforcement on vessels where the jet skis try to jump the bow wake and get in front. Now we're going to introduce another vehicle that will have a distance issue between the tow vehicle and the skier. These are all safety concerns we have. Until we have more knowledge of this, or unless there's a test project done somewhere, it would be very difficult for us to support this from safety concerns. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Let's see. Every, Robert Blinsky, did he testify? Did he show up? Okay. Then I'm going to...
Not all people use equipment reasonably, and I would hope that until there's some experience with these in other states, that we should not allow these in this state. We have enough problems with personal watercraft and their usage and accidents as it is now. Thank you.
Madam Chair, Senator Governor Committee, my name is John Reichelplatz, County Sheriff. I also represent Oregon State Sheriff's Association Marine Affairs Committee as its chair. We do not have an experience with these, and we've been just recently become aware of it and try to call into other states that have, and we don't have a lot of history of the usage of these where they are legal in other states. We've never seen the vessel operate. Some of the very same things that make it acceptable by the presenter about a low profile and giving the skier a lot of visibility, we don't have anything to dispute that, but we are concerned that that same low profile would be an issue for other boaters and other users out on our waterways. We have increasing, and then even in our county, in Clatsop County, we have increasing conflicts between boat users, jet ski operators, bass fishermen, water skiers. Now, on our riverways, we have constant complaints from the bar pilots and the river pilots for added enforcement on vessels where the jet skis try to jump the bow wake and get in front. Now we're going to introduce another vehicle that will have a distance issue between the tow vehicle and the skier. These are all safety concerns we have. Until we have more knowledge of this, or unless there's a test project done somewhere, it would be very difficult for us to support this from safety concerns. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Let's see. Every, Robert Blinsky, did he testify? Did he show up? Okay. Then I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 1296. Just a minute. Mr. Hughes, could you come up and ask a question?
Open that little hearing for a second.
Does this have a prior? Oh, it had the prior to waive and mean.
It has the prior to waive and mean, yes, ma'am.
So if we voted, it was only intended to waive and mean.
That's correct. It would only go to waive and mean. By the way, you don't start this with the starter. You do it with a handle in your skiing. It's not self-propelled. You, as the skier, start this. There seems to be some confusion about that. All the controls are in the handle. It starts with you as the skier behind it. You don't hit a starter button or anything like that.
All right, thanks. Yes?
Madam Chair.
Yes.
Is there a going test?
There must be because the president has it with a prior referral to waive and mean.
We have a fiscal impact statement right here, or legislative revenue impact, I guess it says, has no impact on state or local revenue as analyzed by this office from legislative revenue.
Okay, but here the office is not issued.
Oh, the fiscal
statement. The board said that they themselves didn't send one down, so fiscal isn't going to have an issue.
That's true.
That's all the contract from the reading board and we're going to find out.
Madam Chair, if there's no fiscal impact, it shouldn't go to waive and mean. I mean, waive and mean doesn't want to deal with substantive issues.
I know that, but I think that they were expecting one, and that's why the president took the prior referral on it.
Unless we see the fiscal impact, I think this bill should stay here and
right.
The issues mm-hmm. are resolved.
I did too agree. So we again report the public hearing on Senate Bill 1296. And let's see what's left. The Senate, I just wanted to give you information, the Senate Joint Memorial 6 that urges Congress not to impose tolls on interstate highways. We're not going to hear it today. And we need Senator George, I think, if we're going to, on 764, have you looked at that, Senator Dukes and Senator Castillo?
No.
That's the 10 million. I think you would probably not support this one.
We're
just having a little discussion here. It's 764. Yes, we need Senator George. He's downstairs in hearing room 50.
This is the most pleasing that you can be on that on 764.
Madam Chair, Senator,
have you checked to see what the governor's office to see? This, I guess this is Castillo written up over it. Have you checked?
Me?
Uh-huh.
He's been out of town. He's in Ontario.
Well, but Mr. Wolf or Mr. Wyatt or one of those folks that seems to hang around the building.
I have not.
Okay.
But the people testified. I'll open a little public hearing on Senate Bill 764. And what I thought was that the seniors, and would you want to come up again, Mr. Hazelwood? Is he coming? Okay, Mr. Hazelwood, do you want to testify?
We're
in a public hearing.
We didn't post a public hearing. We can't hold a public
hearing.
Okay, we close that. We're going to open it. We're going to open a work session. A work session on Senate Bill 764. And I invite you to come up and refresh our memories about the Governor's Commission on Seniors. Is that who you represent?
Right.
Okay.
Madam Chair, member of the committee, I am a legislative coordinator for the Governor's Commission, and I think I testified the other day we're composed of 21 people around the state of Oregon. Also, we have one senator, which happens to be Senator Bill Fisher, who testified on this bill. The House of Representatives, the Speaker of the House, has not appointed the member to this committee yet.
Okay.
I understand she's considering some, but because the pay is zero, I assume she's putting it off, but...
Hey, what's the recommendation?
My recommendation is that we This committee pass out Senate Bill 764.
As it's written?
As it's written.
And your whole commission or majority?
The whole commission supports 764 being passed out.
Okay. And have you spoken with the governor's office? Do you think he'll veto this?
My only comment would be if maybe if we work out something for Astoria, he probably won't. But
Madam Chair, that's pretty much out of line. Yeah.
Okay.
What they're doing is taking a piece of transit and moving it over to another state agency.
Okay.
So you're going to have a piece of transit in DHR and a piece of transit in ODA. I don't fault them for trying to find a more efficient way of getting senior and disabled services. I applaud all of that. And I'm not saying that DHR won't do a good job of it. But DHR certainly doesn't want all of transit. People seem to have this belief that senior and disabled ride one set of buses and the rest of the world ride another set of buses. And it's not true. They all ride the same buses. You have to bring them together to get enough ridership to make the system work. And so taking a piece of it and putting it in DHR and leaving another piece in ODOT simply creates more administration and splits up the money and doesn't seem to me to get any more services on the road.
So didn't they tell us that there's already 30 or 50, 40 million in DHR for disabled senior transportation? How much do they already have?
Madam Chair, Senator Hughes, there is $32 million. A lot of that's used for OMAP, the big clients, too.
The whole volunteer program.
And there is a large volunteer program.
To collapse that whole volunteer program, are you?
No, ma'am. We had hoped to increase that.
Yeah, so that program that has a lot of that money and it isn't going away. They're going to keep using it for that program. What they're getting at is the $10 million cigarette tax money. That's the money that follows the bill, and that's the money that is dedicated to senior and disabled services. Today it's being spent over in ODOT. They would like to coordinate it with the volunteer programs and,
right.
and maybe that smart city program or some other thing and do it all out of DHR. But the main transit program is still going to be in ODOT. And all I see is double administration. I don't see any other way around it.
Did you consider that, your committee?
Yes, we have, Madam Chair. And also, if you recall, there was a interim committee who worked on transportation. Part of the recommendations from that committee is in our 764. So 134 and 135 came out of the Senate Interim Committee. So we put a lot of that into our 764.
What would that be? That's not moving the $10 million. So
no, that was not. Yeah. That was not.
Yeah. No,
that came out of the governor's recommended budget.
I don't fault you at all for what you're trying to achieve.
Well, Madam Chair and Senator Gooch, what we are trying to do and what we hope to do if you pass this bill out, we want more transportation in rural areas. And I think with this bill and with the expertise that this group has, that we can do that. Because there's so many areas of the state that does not have adequate transportation for seniors and persons with disabilities. And we hope to do that with this bill.
I'll tell you what, Mr. Hazelwood. Will you bring this bill back and you have four votes on the committee?
Yes. We have to.
Yeah.
Mr. Hazelwood, you testified before the transportation committee.
Sure.
But why did you testify in both committees?
Madam Chair, the governor's commission asked me to testify, and so that's the position I take. If they ask me to testify on a bill, that's what I do. The full commission votes on this, and whatever they vote on, that's the testimony I give.
So you asked Transportation Department to implement this bill?
764, no. We're asking that this go through the Department of Human Resources, because that's where the majority of the seniors and persons with disabilities are, although we realize there's a lot of people, elderly people, in the state of Oregon who are not part of the DHR system, but yet does not have adequate transportation.
Mm-hmm.
You can be, I think I testified before, you can be six blocks away from a bus stop, but if you don't have the facility to get to that bus stop, you might as well not have any public transportation at all. And I think I testified before in my own situation in Staten, we do not have anything. And I'm sure there's other small rural areas that have it. I know the chair of the governor's commission is from Burns, Oregon. And there's a tremendous distance they have to travel if they have to go for medical treatment away from Burns. So we hope to improve on that.
Should we move it to Ways and Means?
Madam Chair, they can't do the substantive stuff. Chair Hannon has resisted again and again doing substantive stuff. And the issues we've got here are very substantive. I mean, I appreciate wanting to improve programs, but the very first priority in this bill is with transportation within or between communities is severely limited or non-existent. So the existing programs that are faltering because the cigarette tax money is a declining revenue source are going to get left out. They're not even in the first round of priorities. So why start up a new system when you can't keep the ones going that you've got now? I think the priorities are wrong in here. And I'm not proposing this. You might do this. You move the whole transit division over to DHR. You don't take half of it and move it over. Okay.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
I have deep respect for Senator Dukes, even though I did not join the Pain and Symptoms Committee, but I did suffer from that this summer with a broken leg. But we intend to improve what you're asking, not take away from it.
Your bill isn't written that way, Lee.
I've been trying to get into your office, and the only thing I can meet you in the hallway, but I respectfully disagree with you, but I appreciate your comment. I'm serious about that.
I'm not serious.
Madam Chair, there is a major part of this, and that is you have a group of people who are affected who will be making the determination. And you have the fact that in the past this has been about $3 million, if I understand correctly. About $300,000 of that $3 million has been taken out for fees. The assumption is that you're going to make up anything that might go to any new program with new dollars that may be available because it's in one spot under consistent management and with somebody who believes that they want to promote the process. So any deficits that may appear, I think, will be quickly made up because you have an agency who says we're trying to meet all of these needs and will maximize those dollars wherever they can. The point of this is there are people who are not served at all who should at least be considered, and that's why that part is in there.
Thank you for that advisory committee. Move those people over and put them in an advisory committee.
Senator Duke, do you have any amendments that you think you could offer that would make this acceptable?
Well, Madam Chair, the other thing I was thinking of, Senator George has said, puts people over it who really use the services and care about it. It's fine. Create an advisory committee and write it strongly enough that they have a real impact and put them over the cigarette tax money in transit and OGA. Let them give the direction to the agency as to how the money's spent.
But does it have the right relating clause? Could you do that? Could you accept that, Senator?
Well, Madam Chair, the whole reason of putting it where the other programs that are delivering similar services to a similar group of people, transit dependent, is the fact that you need to have these services coordinated. As was just stated by Lee, you have gaps right now in the process. And we come to the conclusion after spending a long year on this thing that this is probably the most efficient place to deliver those services.
And I don't disagree with that.
And I'm going to need to leave you again.
Okay, well, I think that until we can come to agreement or get a fourth vote, we're going to have to close the public hearing on the work session on Senate Bill 764 is closed.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay, but I can schedule any time next week if you guys can work it out.
Madam Chair, don't you have a work group that's going to be led by Gary Meeks on this bill?
you appointed a work group asking Gary Wheeler to work it out.
I thought that was another one. Was that this bill?
That's this bill.
Oh, well, has he come back with it?
I scheduled it. They have not met yet. We're having to be able to agree on a meeting date.
Oh, okay. Well, maybe I rescheduled this too quickly then.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was ready. Okay.
Madam Chair, I did run this by the Governor's Commission, and they're willing to stay with 764 until we're...
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Madam Chair, I think the idea of sending the money to the Transportation Department with an advisory group from the senior and disabled should make it work.
Okay, thanks for will too. I'm going to open it's a work session. Yeah,
sure.
Yeah. Oh, no, he's leaving.
Okay.
Right. I know. I'm just going to close the no further business will close. There is one, but I'll move it over. Senate Committee on Transportation is adjourned.
You don't need to.